Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Mum and Mama podcast, brought to you as always by the lovely Golding Accountancy, wearegolding.com. How are you? Hope you're good. I'm in best of all at the moment while you're listening to this. Well, if you're listening to this on Sunday when it comes out, I'm at best of all. Having the time of my life, no doubt. I'll be telling you all about it when I get back. This week I have the wonderful Adam Richardson talking to me about loads of stuff. Adam is the co-creator of Pod Bible magazine and co-host of the Pod Bible podcast. We spoke about him being a stay-at-home dad while his wife went back to work after she finished her maternity leave, so he was kind of the main carer of their daughter. And we also speak about suicide, because sadly Adam lost one of his good friends very recently, and he wanted to share it with me, which was very, I felt very privileged that he felt that he could talk to me about it. So we talk about that and mental health and lots of stuff really, but it's a lovely chat. I do hope you enjoy it, and I will speak to you in a bit.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Work. Work.
So I've decided that I'm going to start a Patreon. Did we talk about this at the podcast thingy?
I think you mentioned it, yeah.
So, and I thought I can just use the videos of the podcast.
Okay.
So do you mind if I use this video?
I actually just ate a leftover curry for lunch, so I might just check I don't have any around my face. But I can't see anything. But I'm quite bad. My wife always points out that I've got food in like the corners of my mouth. No, we're all...
Oh, at least you haven't got a full-on beard.
We're all good, that's true.
I remember when Pip first grew his beard, he found it really hard eating in public.
Yeah, it must be a nightmare.
Because you just get... Yeah. I mean, obviously I wouldn't know.
No.
That's why I shave, because I just can't handle the bits.
When I got braces when I was... Well, I got them off just after my 30th birthday, so I had them late. Mm-hmm. Because I had... When my wisdom teeth came through, my teeth moved. Even though the orthodontist was like, oh, it's not because of your wisdom teeth, it's just... Well, I don't know what it was, but I'm like, but if I have more teeth in my mouth and then my other teeth have moved, surely it's... But I remember when I first got them, eating was just the worst.
Were they proper, like, train track?
Proper train track braces. I had four teeth out and proper train track braces for, like, I think it was about 18 months, maybe.
Okay. I did the, like, Invisalign type thing, or I can't remember what it's called. It was, like, a cheaper version of that. Because my bottom teeth, this one, like, one of the bottom front ones, was really starting to go forward and look really crooked. And I can see my dad, now his teeth are an absolute mess. I was like, I don't want that. And you know what it is, especially since starting to do podcast stuff during lockdown, where you're doing it on Zoom and you can see yourself. So I'm small now, but I'd be like, oh my God, is that what I look like? And you're talking so you can see your teeth. So I was like, I'm going to look into this. And I had to wear they're like, you can take them out and give them a rinse and stuff like that. So they're like, retainers.
Oh, yeah, like the plastic thingy.
And then every couple of weeks you then change them and you have so that they're slightly tighter and then they're putting more pressure on the teeth. So you get like a set sent through right at the start, a box of like eight different sizes. It's quite good. And it was cheap.
That's amazing.
I mean, it was cheaper than doing it through a couple of different... Like I asked my dentist and it was going to cost thousands.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
But now I just have to wear them at night. And I mean, it's not perfect. They're not perfectly straight, but it's much better. Yeah, that's it. But if I stop wearing them at night, they just slowly go back to how they were.
Well, I've got a fixed retainer in the bottom, like a fixed metal.
Oh, right.
Because apparently if your bottom teeth are fine, then your top teeth won't move.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. But that way sounds a lot less painful because it did hurt having them on. My eldest daughter Lola, they're both going to have braces, which is funny because both, I mean, I didn't have braces when I was younger and their father's got good teeth.
Yeah.
So it's funny how...
Did they suck their thumbs or anything?
I mean, they're not terrible. No, they didn't. Neither of them did.
Because I did.
Have you got the thing?
I did. I sucked my thumb and then my front teeth were starting to stick out a little bit. So when I was about 15, I had to have braces. But I didn't have the train tracks. I had the ones you could take out, but they still had all the metal that would dig into your gums and...
I had to have, because obviously I had teeth out, I have got some gaps.
Yeah.
And after I had, I must have been when I had the braces, on the bottom, my bottom lip on the inside, my skin used to stick through the holes in my teeth.
Oh, wow.
And I ended up with like actual lumps in my, that I had to have cut out in the end, because then I kept, I think there was one or two, I can't remember, my memory is so bad. but I did. I caught it a couple of times. I think it used to get caught back in my teeth.
Oh God!
And it just really hurt. So I had them cut
out.
That
sounds awful.
But when she had to inject my lip, and it's still a bit numb.
Oh really? Oh, that's interesting.
And this was I don't know how many years ago, but it is obviously a risk when you have anaesthetic.
Yeah.
And I've just got like this. I don't notice it unless I think about it, and then I can feel it. But there is just like a line down my bottom lip that is just never came
that's
back.
Weird. Well, at least it doesn't look like it, you know. At least it's not like drooping down, or you like dribble every time you have a drink. I mean, you might dribble every time you have a drink anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's my excuse now.
Yeah.
So, hello.
Hello,
Adam. That's funny because I just thought I was thinking, well, I've got you on because I've had Stu and Pip on a couple of times and I've never had you on.
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously not just the reason that I've got you on, but I thought, we can talk about Pod Bible.
We can talk about anything.
Because I don't think I've ever talked to them about Pod Bible. I mean, obviously I've talked to you about them in real life, but like...
Yeah.
I
know a lot more about Pod Bible than they do.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You're obviously the brains and driving force behind it because they're always... podcasting.
They're
the time,
always busy.
They, so.
It was funny, we had a chat the other day, a meeting, and we were talking about things we were doing, and Stu was like, well, you know, we've all got our podcasts, and I sort of nodded and I thought, I've got a podcast that I do once every 2 weeks, whereas he puts out 5 episodes a week of Off the Beaten Track, then he does about 3 or 4 others. So I think he spends a bit more time podcasting than I do. That's why I had to come on here. I was like, I need to do other podcasts.
Yeah, you've got... I actually don't know how... Knowing how time-consuming, obviously, it is. Not even just... It's just the finding the time to actually sit down and chat, which is... I love.
Yeah.
But, like, fitting it in and, you know, we've rescheduled this a couple of times because life...
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I don't know how he has so many podcasts and actually manages to do it all around having a family and a...
I know.
Has he got a job anymore or is he just doing pop-up?
He does bits and bobs. I think he... And obviously he's got the brush, which means that he's up, up really late on a Friday night. I don't know how he does everything because he's got so many different projects.
Know.
He's got different companies.
Yeah.
He's got different like partners and business partners and things. I
know. He is like Del Boy.
But I'd just be so stressed. I find Pod Bible stressful sometimes. But in reality, I've just got loads to do, but they're all quite quick things to do. So a lot of the time I've got a massive to-do list. And if I actually sit for a few hours, I just get it all ticked off and then I feel relaxed.
Yeah.
But if I was dealing with different email addresses and different companies and different bank cards and all the different stuff that he has to deal with, I don't know how I'd do it.
So do you put it all together?
Yeah, so I... Initially, Pip and Stu got me involved because I was doing some design work for them. So I'd done, I was a fan of Pip for a while and used to message him occasionally on Twitter. And then he needed a graphic designer for something. And I've been a graphic designer for a long time. Used to sort of start as a hobbyist, like a hobby type thing, whilst I was doing other jobs, which I wasn't really into. And then I retrained and I started as an intern at a design agency when I was about 27. So quite late to, you know, I was earning 500 quid a month for about 6 months as an intern. Luckily, because my wife is successful and has a like a proper grown-up job and could cover the bills for that period. And she was like, if that's what you want to do, then we'll work out a way of doing it, which was great.
That's great.
Yeah, so I started... working in an agency and built up my experience and worked with some great people and learned a lot. And then I got to the stage where I was like, I love doing the day-to-day design stuff, but I actually like doing the client liaison stuff. I like doing the customer facing bits and bobs. I want to do more than this. And I thought I'm going to go freelance. I've learned the skills, how to use the software. I'm going to try and get my own clients. So I went freelance, started working from home about 10 years ago and, I mean, it was never hugely, hugely successful, but I had a couple of contracts along the way, which paid well, which kept me going. And so, yeah, it would have been about 2016, 17, I first messaged Pip and offered my help, did a couple of design bits for him. And then when he was adding podcasts to the network, I think the first one I did was Say Why to Drugs, and then I did Off the Beaten Track, and then I did Stop and Search for Jason, and then I did Films to be Buried With, and I did some parenting podcasts. I don't know what happened to that. And then I think Stu had the idea for Pod Bible in 2018. And they realised they'd need somebody to do the design and layout.
Yeah.
And they called me. I was a freelance designer, and it was basically another freelance design job, I thought. I'd design the mag, and that would be it. But as it grew, and as we started working on it, and we were getting more partners and advertisers, we realised this could be an ongoing thing. And then we realised that actually, I wasn't just doing the design work. I was getting involved in all the business decisions. And we realised, actually, we're a trio here. Let's make this a proper company. And we can each be equal directors. And here we are.
Was it only going to be one then?
Well, I think initially... Well, I think we hoped there'd be more than one. But I thought it would be like once every couple of months, I'd spend a couple of hours laying out their magazine. And then I'd be doing my other work. But it quickly became apparent that actually making the magazine was quite a lot more work than just laying out content. I was actually having to write a load of the content or email people to send questions and do interviews and picking the podcasts and making sure we have a big range of pods and it's not just all the... I mean, the first issue...
Because it must take ages.
It did. It doesn't take as much time now because, you know, we're 22 mags deep, so we're in the flow.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's funny when...
Do people approach you now?
Yeah.
To be in it?
I was saying to Pip and Stu this morning on our little WhatsApp group, there's a big PR company who I won't mention who look after a load of podcasts, big podcasts. And we used to email them all the time in the first couple of years. Oh, you know, have you got anyone who wants to be on the cover, or can we get somebody for an interview? They used to ignore our emails. Then we got to the stage where they'd reply and say no. And now they're sending us stuff all the time saying, can this person feature on the cover?
Yeah.
Can we get this person on the podcast for an interview? So it's really cool.
How do you decide? Is it very much based on what you three like still rather than making the...
No. I'd say it was, and when I look back at that first issue, it's full of just the podcasts we were listening to, and Pip was writing a lot back then because we didn't have any writers, and now we've got freelance writers that we use, and we obviously try and be a bit more diverse because we are three white guys and we listen to a lot of the same sort of pods. So now I sort of have a bit of a plan. I have a look. I've got a big spreadsheet full of all the pods we've recommended in the past. If I'm listening to pods or I'm reading about pods and something takes my eye, then I'll shove that in the spreadsheet. And then when it comes round to it, I'll be like, right, let's pick a nice mix. You know, we'll have one massive podcast that everybody already knows about. We'll make sure we have some real like niche podcasts that people may not have heard of. We'll have comedy. We'll have true crime. But then we'll also make sure we have different creators. So obviously there are still bloody loads of white men making podcasts, but we'll try and make sure that we're a bit more diverse in terms of, you know, gender and everything, basically.
Yeah. Do you know what the statistics are with regards to race and gender with podcasts? Because, I mean, it is... I mean, that's the joke, isn't it? It's just it's all older white men, but... Is that starting to change a bit now, or is there any way of knowing?
It is. There are statistics. There are big surveys that come out every year that talk about, you know, who the creators are. I can't remember what the stats are, but it is still heavily weighted towards white men. And I think listeners as well. I think most listeners were white men, but that's probably because they were listening to themselves or their mates.
But
things have changed a lot, and definitely from a Pod Bible perspective, when the whole George Floyd and Black Lives Matter stuff happened, that was quite a big moment for us because I had thought we were quite good at including a diverse range of pods. And then when that happened, I looked through and I was like, wow, well, we haven't had... We'd had one non-white cover star in Ramesh Ranganathan, but... When I looked through all the podcasts we'd been recommending, we'd hardly recommended any from people who weren't white, basically.
Yeah.
That was a big moment for us. And since then, and we've definitely continued it. And it's a pleasure because, I mean, I'm learning about all kinds of other podcasts and different things and meeting different people. We've changed that. And if you flick through the last 5, 6, 7, 8 mags, I think you'd see that there's a real good range of different types of pods for everybody. So,
Well, that's good.
It is good. And actually, I'm proud of that. I am proud of that because it would be easy just to be like, let's just recommend the latest off menu. Let's put an Adam Buxton in there. You know, let's get Richard Herring's, because these are all big, popular, fun podcasts. I'm proud that we still do that because I know, again, there are a lot of people who, when that stuff happened, there are a lot of businesses who were like, well, we're going to change our ways. And they did for like 3 months or something like that. But we've kept it up, I think.
I've started a business with my friend. Well, she's basically brought me in on her business, and she's a hairdresser, so she's got a lot of clients who do all different kinds of things, and one of them has made this makeup bag that she sells, and she does quite well. But she said that when she uses a model who is not white in her advertising, the what's the word when they can see who gets involved with it? Response rate or the interaction rate or something?
Yeah, they'll have different analytics for it where they can see.
It goes down dramatically.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, I couldn't believe that. But obviously, that's, of course, it's, you know, that's the world we live in, is it? But I was absolutely shocked.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's made her. So then it's the really hard thing of, she obviously wants to have models who represent everyone, but then if it's going to damage her business to do so, that they, and she's a small business compared to, you know.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh my God, that's...
It's interesting.
It's terrible, isn't it? But it's so like...
Yeah. Because I often think about that, because sometimes I'll look at our mag and I'll be like, well, actually, we've probably got about 40%, although it's probably like 60% white podcasts. And then I'm like, well, I mean, in reality, in Britain, what is it? Is it like 80% white? And then I'm like, well, I don't need to think about any of this, actually. If I'm finding podcasts that are interesting, because let's face it, the majority of the white male podcasts are talking, you know, it's just comedy or talking about films or talking about football. And actually, you know, getting different people involved from different perspectives and different backgrounds means it's just a load of different interesting content. And then it's the whole like, yeah, okay, it's that might, the balance might be slightly off and maybe more in favour of the different races or whatever. But we need to do that, right? We need some positive discrimination, or people, 100%. Yeah, and
yeah, 100%.
To get these things out in front of people. And
I've had conversations with people who, not, you know how some people, they're not racist, but how they think is a bit racist, but they're not aware of it because they just think that that's how things are or whatever. Do you know what I mean? But it's like, I remember when all the Black Lives Matter stuff started, and my mate, who is very well-intentioned, was basically just saying, I don't know why it's got to be such a problem. Like, I don't see colour. Like, as a white man, I always find it very troubling when any white men give me opinions on women or people that aren't white. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, you can't... I mean, obviously, everyone can have an opinion, but it's like, you can't... You will never walk in their shoes to comment on their experience. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, you know, everyone should just get along. Like, racism isn't that as bad as it used to be.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, why do you think all this shit's fucking happening? Like, and the whole... People that don't believe there's still a pay gap. And,
I know.
You know, it's like, it's because he sees the world, because he doesn't discriminate. He doesn't think anyone else does, but...
And he doesn't experience
it. You are discriminating because you're not acknowledging the fact that stuff is still... We still need to really change.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you have that sort of unconscious bias. And actually, since all that, I'm doing a lot of reading and listening to people and listening to pods and... It's like, oh shit, yeah, actually there's a lot of things that I thought I wasn't, discrimination that I didn't think I took part in, but actually I did without realising it.
Yes.
And you make assumptions, don't you? And I grew up in a very white village, and in school it was like 100% white, my school, I think. We had
really?
Yeah, it really was. And it wasn't really until I went up to the Midlands for university when I started meeting all kinds of different people, and I was like, oh shit. Yeah.
Where did you grow up? Like Brighton?
Yeah, just...
Sussex?
A little village just outside Brighton, just north of Brighton.
Yeah.
And I went to a primary school with 70 kids, and there were like five kids in my year. There were three boys, two girls in my year. It was tiny, really sheltered.
In your year?
Yeah, in my year.
There were five kids
was primary
in your
school.
Year.
Secondary school, there were more.
Wow.
Yeah. And we had... Yeah, as I said, I think for about a year there was one black child who joined the school, and it was a huge novelty. We were all like, "Oh my God, look at this! He's so cute!" And I don't remember. I mean, who knows? But I don't remember any negativity or racism really. But it was all more like, "Oh my gosh, this is like this is crazy for us because we don't experience this." And what I find sometimes interesting is that I then moved to the Midlands and went to university. Then I went travelling, and then I lived in London for 8 years. And so I have then experienced living in much more sort of multicultural areas and mixing with all sorts of different people. But some of my friends have remained in like the little village or on the outskirts or the towns where we lived. And they're not bad people, again, but they've, you can see they've still got a lot, some of that sort of unconscious bias that they're not, they wouldn't say is a problem. But, you know, I try and sort of challenge them on it occasionally, but it's difficult, that, isn't it? When it's your mates, you're like, shall I bother? But you should, I guess, but I don't know.
Yeah, you should, but then it's...
Got to pick and choose, haven't you?
Yeah, sometimes, because sometimes it's like, it's not the point of just... It's like Rich Wilson said that he did this skit about being non-binary toilets.
Right.
And basically his mates were basically just saying that it's wrong or whatever. And he's, I think it was like, why do you fucking care?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing for me, is it's like, why does it matter to people what other people are doing?
Yeah, that is, that's how I feel exactly the same way. Yeah.
It's like, I couldn't give a shit who you choose to love, or as long as everyone's happy.
Yeah.
But with the racism stuff, it's not always just a, I like to think that I challenge people, but then it depends who those people are and where my vocabulary isn't always the best, or my knowledge. I know, I really feel like I know what I want to say, but sometimes I can't get it out. And it's like,
I have the same, actually. Yeah. And especially in messages, like if it's in a group or something like that, and you start typing something, you're like, no, that's not really what I mean. And then you can't get the words. Yeah. It's a tough one.
The best one's Pip's brother, Ian. Have you ever met him?
No, I've heard lots about him.
He's like, he's just the best person. When he used to be on Facebook, I just used to love it, because if any of my racist acquaintances on there or whatever, or anyone ever commented on, because I share a lot of like left-wing stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But if there was ever any comments or anything, he'd just go straight on there and shut them down, literally, in just the best way.
That's perfect.
He was just the best person, because he's so clever and so funny and articulate.
Yeah.
And I really miss him, because I want him to have all my arguments for me, or him to always be there so he can question people or confront people, or, because I think the best way in those situations is to kind of, I was talking to Jordan Gray about this actually, if you can make people laugh or kind of not attack people, but kind of bring them round to your way of seeing in a funny or nicer way, then it's much better, isn't it? Cause then you,
that's sort of the role I always used to play when I was younger with our friendship groups. Whenever there'd be any beef or any arguments or anything that was like, looked like it wasn't going how it should, I'd always, I didn't realise, but I took on the role of the peacekeeper, or the person who would go in and resolve stuff. And it would always be that, like a really friendly approach, just being like, look, what are we doing? Like, why? There's no need for any of this, is there? And I'm not cross or angry. Let's just, like, it's just silly, isn't it? And trying to get people to think about the other person's perspective, because so often people are just wrapped up in how they're feeling. But it's interesting you're saying about Ian and... having, because I had, and this is fairly fresh, but I'm happy to talk about it, but my best friend from secondary school, when I was like his best man at his wedding, and he was one of my ushers, and my first ever flatmate that I live with in London, he's like that. He was like that for me, in the sense that he's really clever and really articulate and could get across his opinion perfectly, and would say the stuff that I'd want to be able to say, that I just was kind of thinking in a garbled way in my mind, but couldn't get out. We were just on exactly the same wavelength, like pretty much all of my opinions aligned with his opinions on stuff. Sadly, he died 4 months ago. I didn't prepare you with this at all, but he died. Right. And, I've spent a lot of the last few months, obviously it's been awful.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Sorry, I didn't expect to bring it up, but it's so similar to what you're saying about Ian.
Yeah.
Because I just realised how much I miss him, even in like some of our WhatsApp groups, you know, where some people get a bit, you know, talking about politics or talking about whatever it may be. Even though we all generally are on the same side, there'll be times when some people go too far, or there's some people are even like too left wing and are just, you know, he would always be able to come in and just kill an argument, or come in and just say what needed to be said. And I'd be like, oh, thank fuck, because that's how I feel. And I've been trying to work out how to say it. And yeah, he's like an absolutely huge loss in that sense.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's really shit.
Yeah, it's been really, really, really shit.
Yeah.
Worst thing that's ever happened.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't happen at our age. You expect, like, there's people that you expect to lose. Mm. But when you lose a peer, my mate died, well, it was 7 years ago now. But she was ill for a long time. She had, unfortunately, she had cancer.
Right.
And they treated it, but then it just kept coming back. And it just wasn't good. But she actually, the reason why she died was they actually gave her the wrong medication and it ruptured her bowel.
Oh, right.
So it wasn't, I mean, if she'd have been in a better way, well, I don't think she would have survived it, actually. Mm. But it was one of the family never did anything. Because it was a mistake, basically. But wow. Then you don't know if she would have... I mean, she didn't really have any quality of life at the time that it happened. And I think for them to have fought, they didn't have it in them. Because it's a long, very long process, isn't it? Trying to go against the NHS.
Yeah, I bet.
But yeah, that was... So we kind of had a bit of warning-ish about it. But yeah, it's just not... It's not right, is it? Like, obviously, the biggest fear in the world is losing a child. Mm. Like, that is, you know.
Yeah.
But I try not to think about things. Like
no, you
that.
Can't. I mean.
Because it's like, you just don't want to. You start going down that rabbit hole. It's
it is
like,
horrible. I've got a 6-year-old girl, and yeah, I wasn't prepared for that when, you know, you just think, oh, I can't wait to have a child. It's just going to be fun. And then just the worry. And yours are older now, so they're going to start going out and.
Lola's starting senior school in September, so today she's actually there having like a induction right. day. And when we were walking there this morning, she was like, "Are you going to cry?" And I was like, "No, I'm not going to cry. I mean, I might cry on your first day, but because I cried when Juno started junior school, because their school is it's infants in one place and juniors in another, right. So it feels like a bit more of a. Lola's ready to go. Like I'm not sad that she's starting. I'm excited for her because she's old beyond her years anyway. But my other friend, her daughter's just finished her A levels and she's gone travelling. And we were talking about that the other day and I started getting like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Because they are gonna leave me.
They are.
Aren't they?
Definitely
and which
are.
Is I want them to and I want them to have the best time ever, but I am gonna be like, oh.
Do they acknowledge that they're going to leave you? Because my daughter still's like, I'm never leaving you. I'm going to live with you forever. You know, I'd never want to move out. And I was like, you will want to move out. She's like, no, but do yours.
Juno, I have it written on a bit of paper from Juno that she's not going to move out till she's 45. She's like, I'm not going. I will never leave you. I'm never going anywhere. And I think she'll be the worst one.
I don't think
out of the pair of them.
I don't think you'll want that. That's a bit too long, right? 45.
Yeah, but to be fair though, if we're still living in London. Yeah. I mean, they might never leave me, might
true,
they?
That is true, actually.
They might be here forever. But yeah, I want... It is that weird... I really want them to just have the best time and have amazing experiences and travel and...
Yeah.
You know, but also, I know that I'm just going to be worried for the rest of my life now.
But the weird thing is that, like, in a way, it's the best time ever for them to travel because you've got WhatsApp, you've got FaceTime, you've got, you know, they can be in touch all the time.
Yeah.
My sister is... she'll probably listen to this and I always get it wrong. She's 7 years older than me. But when she went travelling, when she was 18, I think, we just used to get a postcard every 3 months. And it'd be like full with tiny writing saying what she's been up to.
Yeah.
And then when I went travelling when I was 18, there was no video calls, no WhatsApp groups or anything like that. You have to buy a phone card and then go to a phone box and call back. And then we had a little website thing where we'd sometimes write a little bit of a diary on there. But now you'd be able to track their iPhone. You'd be able to know exactly what's happening.
Well, that's what my niece went travelling. Well, my sister, she lives in Brighton. She's 10 years older than me. So her daughter's, the eldest one's like 24 now. Xanthi's 22, I think. Yeah. But when she went travelling, I got a bit like, oh my God, she's going. But I was following her on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I think she even had like something that we could sign up to follow to see exactly where she was. But I was like, oh, this is, it's not like she's really gone.
Yeah.
You know, because you can still see her. And...
Yeah. But then I...
So yeah, it is better in that
sense. It is. But then you could end up checking that all the time. I remember when we first sent our daughter to nursery and they were like, oh, that we've got cameras and you can log in. and we used to be able to log in and check every, we'd be checking every room. Where is she? Where is she? Where is she? And then we'd be like, we'd pick up the phone, you know, where is she? Where? She's just in the loo, or she's just outside or whatever. They had cameras in every single room.
Oh, I don't know how I feel about that.
It was good because once we chilled out a bit and we only checked it like once every couple of days, it was really nice to see her getting involved and happy and laughing, you know, doing activities with her friends. But initially, yeah, we were checking every hour, and maybe it's not needed. I don't know.
I remember when they were at nursery, I remember thinking I'd love to just watch them play. Yeah. Because the stories that they used to come home with. But I think that if I could, I would probably just watch them. But then also, because I imagine you can't hear. No. It's like, I don't know.
There were times when we'd see and she'd be crying, or you'd be like, why is she napping now? Why have they got her napping now? Yeah. She's not going to sleep tonight now. What are you doing? And then you've got to leave them to it. They're professionals. They know what they're doing.
Did she like nursery?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she loved it. It was great for us. We sent her when she was quite young, really. About 9 months she started at nursery, all the way up until she started at school. And she used to do like one day a week, and then eventually she was doing three, I think. And I used to do a lot of, because I was freelance, when we had Alex, my wife did maternity leave and then went back to work, and I was sort of part-time freelance designer, part-time dad, which was amazing.
Yeah.
When we got to send her to nursery, it was great. Like, I'm sure you'll remember actually having a few hours in the day where you could get stuff done. But it's just seeing her development with her language, and they were great in getting her prepared for school and starting to do a bit of reading and a little bit of writing and that kind of stuff, and having the confidence to do stuff in groups, and, you know, physical play and all that kind of stuff that we weren't necessarily doing at home, or wouldn't have the energy to do at home. It was great. But the best thing was when she finished nursery and went to school, and then we saved those nursery fees, because you don't realise how much you're spending, and then they go somewhere for free, like school, and suddenly you're saving loads of money each month.
It's essentially one income, isn't it, really?
It was mad, actually.
It's crazy. It
was like, when she went to school, it was like one of us had a huge pay rise, because it was like, oh shit, we've suddenly got like all this extra money each month. It was great.
So how did you find being I suppose you were the main carer, weren't you?
Yeah, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was the best.
Were you the only dad at the baby classes?
Yeah, quite often I was. You know what? I loved that too. Because I've always found it, I don't know, I've never really been one for like big groups of blokes, you know, because you know what big groups of blokes could be like. It might be that they're all lovely and sensitive and whatever, but then when they get together, their guard goes up and it's all a bit like, do you watch the football? Well, what's your favourite beer? So I'd go and I just find it really easy to talk to the mums about parenting and school and whatever. And when there would be another guy there, I'd be like, oh, well, now I'm expected to speak to that guy, aren't I? Because we're the guys. So it was weird. But I loved it. I absolutely loved going and doing stuff with her. And I used to have every Thursday with her, whatever. And we'd always go off and do adventures and be like, right, let's go and find another soft play or an adventure playground or a swimming pool we haven't been to. I remember towards the end, I was like, God, I'm running out of ideas. It's going to be great when she's at school 5 days a week. But now she is. I do miss that. It's tough.
How did your wife find going back to work? Did she go back when she was 9 months?
Yeah. She took I think she took a full year. I think she was able to take a full year, which was good. She was ready. She was ready for it. I know she found it tough because she was commuting, and so there'd be times when she'd leave the house before Alex had woken up and get back after I'd put her to bed. And that was really tough. But she is like a driven professional person who like wants to do well in her career, and she was very much like this. I know that during the pregnancy she found that quite difficult. She didn't really feel like, you know, I know a lot of people when they're pregnant sort of feel like, oh, this is great, I've wanted this feeling and it feels right and feels ready, and Hannah sort of felt as if she didn't feel like herself, if she felt very strange. And then the baby came, yep. And then it was like, oh, is this me now, is it? I just clear up sick and do dirty nappies. I can do so much more than this.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, when the time came, she was desperate to go back to work and have adult conversations and use the plethora of other skills that she has. It's not just, you know, rocking a baby to sleep and all that stuff. So, yeah, she was well up for going back to work.
Yeah, and it's, I suppose, my experience of when I started doing the baby groups was nice because we all used to moan about our other halves.
Yeah.
And how hard it was. But you must have had you must have had a different experience, but you might not have had a different experience. But I suppose it was, what did you talk about? Did you talk about the babies? Did you moan about your partners? Was it a mixture of?
No, it's a weird one because and I'm not just saying this, but I don't think I've ever moaned about my wife Hannah to anyone really, because a couple of my mates will occasionally be like, oh, my wife's got me doing this and I can't believe it, or no, I can't come to that because my wife's booked something, and I'm always like, oh, this is rubbish, because it doesn't really seem like they're a proper team unit, and I feel like we're like a really good team, and that we don't really ever have anything to moan about. And if I did have anything to moan about, I'd probably more likely want to, this doesn't always work out, but I'd want to like actually just talk to her about it and resolve it,
rather than
slag her off or moan to my mates about it, because when my mates do it to me, I'm like, this is awkward, and I know for a fact that if his wife knew that he was saying this about her to me, this wouldn't be going down well at all. So,
but do you find, because one thing I find strange, I've never really been a relationship person. Like, I was always single when I was younger, really. Yeah. And then, obviously, I switched from my ex and I've not been with anyone else since.
Yeah.
But a lot of people that I know, I feel like they're in relationships with people because that's kind of what they decided to do. But they're not really, like, they sit in different rooms at night and watch different programmes, which I've never really understood. Because I'm like, how can you be with someone if you haven't got, how can you not like the same TV stuff or... They moan that what makes them watch certain films, and they just socialise differently. And I mean, I appreciate that you need to have your own time, but I just don't feel like they're really. I don't get it. It's like, so you've had kids and you've got to stay in the same house, but
I don't get it.
I just don't understand.
No. And actually, what I try and think, I try and remember that a lot of people's relationships on the outside are probably pretty different to how they are when they're at home. I've definitely got some friends who, when they're out and about, they're like bickering and arguing and arguing the toss about the kids and disagreeing with each other about how they're looking after the kids or what they're eating. And I think, well, surely when they're at home and maybe when the kids are in bed, they must actually have some nice chats and they must actually love each other, because this can't be sustainable, can it? I don't know. It feels like... And I feel like, I don't know... I mean, because Hannah and I, we over the last few years, we've sort of, we do a lot more separate stuff. And I've got this, so I'm recording now in my, I used to have, my office was inside in the spare bedroom. And then a couple of years ago, we converted the garage into a gym and office. So I now quite often will come out here in the evening to do some work, or I sometimes do like, personal projects, design projects, or music-y type stuff, or podcast stuff. And Hannah really, I think she quite enjoys that, because then she gets to watch like the TV that I'm not that necessarily into, which is basically she watches everything and I'll watch select things. That'll happen a few nights a week. But I don't know about having two separate living rooms with two separate TVs. That does sound weird.
Yeah. And also, like, you've got too much money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So what did you do before you started the design stuff?
My degree was in, it was digital media, but I wanted to get into film and TV, and I wanted to do editing. So I did video editing, was a big part of my degree. So my first job was in London as a runner for a post-production company. So that was basically going around Soho and dropping off tapes when everything was done on physical tapes. And
what company?
It was called Nat's Post Production, and then it was Evolutions. It was in Soho Square.
Okay.
Which companies did you used to deal with? Or?
Oh no, only the farm.
Oh yeah, the farm. Yeah, they were on.
I only my friends worked for there.
Okay. Yeah, we used to deal with the farm, but most of it was making tea and toast, and I made toast for Gordon Ramsay and Jeremy Clarkson and Alan Sugar and. It was quite a weird, wild time, but it was exciting because I was in the big city and I was like 21. But what I found there is that actually going down the editing route, it was really technical and you had to learn loads of this technical stuff and you had to do a lot of shift work and really graft for a few years before you'd become an editor. And I fell more into the client service stuff. And we'd be making tea and toast, and I'd be like, do you know what? It might be a bit more efficient if we have the tea bags here, and maybe we. And I started coming up with that, and I ended up moving into the client services area, which I did for a bit, and then I got made redundant, and then there was a recruitment company that I used to deal with who'd send us freelance runners, and I went to them and said, have you got any work? And they said, well, you could work for us for a bit, and I did recruitment for 3 years, and that was. That was pretty, I mean, I like the people I work with, but it was just because it was sales and it wasn't creative and it just wasn't what I wanted to be doing at all. And they were definitely the 3 years of my career where I would work and then totally switch off as soon as I left the office, go home. And those were the biggest partying years and not really giving a shit and not really having any ambition and just going in and then clocking off, that kind of thing. And then I did that for 3 years. I was like, I can't do this. I was creative at school and I got all right grades and my degree's not too bad. I've got to get back on track. And that's when we decided, why don't I retrain and become a designer? Which I did. But again, that was
how long did it take?
I did a load of stuff at home, so I did a few courses to learn some of the software, which would get me to a level where I could apply for some jobs. And then I was at that agency. I think it was a 6-month internship, but I did it for 4 months before they offered me a permanent job. And then I did that for about a year, I think. And then I left to go freelance. And then I was freelance for about 6 years or something before Pod Bible. But the thing with Pod Bible, again, I'd got to a stage where I had quite a few clients and was doing okay, contributing a decent chunk to the family. But when Pod Bible came along, I basically had to say no to loads of work because I couldn't guarantee I'd be able to do it because of the Pod Bible stuff.
Yeah.
And obviously when we started Pod Bible, we were making nothing. And we had partners who were paying us money, but we were spending all of that money on printing the magazine. And so again, I had to turn to my wife and be like, remember when you sort of bailed us out a bit when I wanted to retrain? And you know how now I've got a secure income coming in. Well, I kind of going to stop that because now I'm going to get to work with Pip and Stu and interview podcasters and it's all really exciting. So can I do it? And she was like, well, yeah.
But you've done so well. It's smashed it, isn't it? How many copies go out now with the Observer or the Telegraph?
It's with the Times. 65,000 with the Times. So we did go to the Guardian for a bit, which was where we wanted to be, but then there were some issues there in terms of they limited us quite a lot on how many pages we could have and the size, and it just couldn't really work. So we ended up going back to the Times and increasing from 45,000 to 65,000. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
We've had this podcast in the mag. We probably need to have it in there again. We haven't had.
Yes, yeah, I think that you should.
Get you on the cover.
Yes.
That'd be great.
Because you need more women. But it's every month, isn't it?
It's every other month. I mean, it's definitely.
You should know this.
It's all right. It's crossed our minds to go monthly, but I mean, then that's double the work. So I think that would only work if we.
Does it take you 2 months to get it together?
Yes and no. I mean, yes, but I'm not working 9 till 5 on the magazine every day.
Yeah.
You know, I do there's a couple of weeks in the middle of those 2 months where I won't really work on the mag and we'll be doing other stuff, trying to get, you know, more advertisers in or working on other bits and bobs, whatever it may be. But then obviously we do the Pod Bible podcast, which comes out every 2 weeks. And we have the website, which has got loads of extra articles and interviews and reviews and recommendations and editorial stuff. We have the newsletter. So it's expanded. But it's still me, Pip and Stu. Pip took a little bit of a step back after the first couple of years because he was like, my work here is done, in the sense that initially he had all the contacts and he knew Richard Herring and Adam Buxton and could get us interviews and stuff like that. But Stu and I were doing the majority of the day-to-day, so Pip took a little step back, but is still involved in all the big decisions. And it's a great dynamic, though. Pip's great because Stu will quite often be like, I've got an idea, and I think we should do this right now. And then I'll be like, but that's loads of work, and I'm going to do all of that work, and maybe we shouldn't. And then Pip comes in the middle and goes, well, you're both right. So why don't we do the idea, but why don't we take twice the amount of time over it, or that kind of thing? He's the mediator.
Yeah.
And he's always calm.
Yeah, I can. Yes, he is always. Yeah, he is always calm. He is. That's the one thing you can count on.
Yeah.
Because he's always calm.
Which is great. It is great. Because I can get flustered and Stu can get flustered. And then Pip comes in and goes, why don't we do this? And me and Stu go, oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So it's a good...
He's very aware of how much other people are doing as well, which is nice. Like, he doesn't want to take the piss out of anyone. No. Or, you know.
No, that's true, actually. Even now, I'll do... he'll ask me to help him with some random design projects or some documents if he's for his scripts or whatever like that. And he'll always offer to pay me or you know, whatever. And most of the time, I'm like, no, it's fine, because... they're just quick little jobs, but he's definitely very fair.
Yeah, he is very fair.
But we shouldn't be too nice, because he'll probably listen to this as well.
We better. I don't know if he tells me he listens. I did get the odd message saying this one was good or that one was good, or I couldn't listen to that one because it wasn't, the sound was too...
Yeah. Oh, he'll listen to this one. I'll make him. How long have you known him for?
20 years.
Okay.
Yeah, we worked in HMV in Lakeside together.
Oh, really? You were there too? Okay.
Yeah. But I was only there, I was part-time. I think I was there for a year or 2 years. I can't remember. This is so bad, I can't remember. But I hurt my back, and then they all take the piss because they're like, that I was skiving, but I wasn't. I didn't really do very much work.
Okay.
I was older than everyone else.
Right.
I think they were all like 19 and I was like 23, 24.
Okay.
But yeah, we just...
With a bad back.
With a bad back, yeah.
The old one with the bad back.
Yeah.
Skiving again.
we both liked independent cinema, really. And we used to travel into town because we were in Essex. We used to come into town to go to the Curzon or whatever and watch the films that would never come out to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and that was it. And then he came and stayed at my flat for a while, because then I moved into London. And then he did his little tour... Because he started doing the music.
Yeah.
And he did his little tour in his little van.
Yeah.
And then he just became really famous. And it was like, oh,
this is weird.
That's weird.
But pretty cool.
And it was amazing. I still can't really believe it. But, I mean, I can believe that he's done so well, because he's the hardest working person I've ever met in my life. And he's so like, that's what I'm doing. And he does it, which is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And all the different things he tries, it's...
it's brilliant, and he's so...
I've definitely learned a fair bit from Pip.
Yeah.
And then he's godfather, isn't he, to one of your kids, so...
He is, yeah.
Must be a pretty special bond that you've got.
Well, it's his fault that I met their father, so...
Okay.
Which he still owes me quite a lot for.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, really, yeah, but I've not seen him for ages. I saw him in November briefly, because it was my mum's birthday, and we went to Margate.
Right. He doesn't really go out anymore, does he?
He never went out a lot anyway.
No, that's true.
And now he's got the perfect excuse to hide.
Yeah, I saw him a couple of weeks ago, and that's the first time I'd seen him since before the pandemic. Because
we've
been doing everything on Zoom, yeah.
Yeah,
And obviously a lot of the things for Pod Bible would be London meets, and he was always like, well, I don't necessarily want to come into London. And a lot of the meetings, he doesn't need to. Like, it's just me and Stu that needs to be there. And so there are a few things that came up where we nearly all got together, but we never really needed to. But now Stu's got an office. Yes. We all met there. So, yeah.
Was that your first time in Tilbury?
No, I'd been there. I'd been up about 6 months before. Okay. Lovely, beautiful place.
Yeah.
It's nice that Stu's got the office. But
It is nice that he's got the office.
Yeah.
But it's just nice that you're all doing so well. Because the Pod Bible was an amazing idea, isn't it? And it's really good. And
well, that was brilliant. Yeah, it was Stu's idea, so we should big up Stu a bit quickly. Yeah, he had the idea, and he's definitely the ideas man. I don't tell them, but I have ideas, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to suggest that because then I'll have to do it. So I just park it, and then a few months later, Stu comes up with the idea, and I go, oh, well done. Okay. Oh, well done on your original idea. No, but it's funny because since what happened to my friend happened 4 months ago, obviously I then, in that first couple of months, I was like, well, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, who gives a shit about podcasts and magazines? I'm going to quit everything and go and work for a mental health charity.
Yeah.
Because it was a mental health related thing.
Yeah.
And I just didn't really care. And I was reading my emails and I was like, here's our new podcast about gardening. Could it ever feature? And I was like, I felt like replying, I don't care. to every email I was getting.
Yeah.
Pip and Stu were amazing, as you'd expect, in just letting me take whatever time I needed.
And
they'd speak to me and I'd be like, I'm sorry, I just can't talk about this now because I've got no interest and I'm just, all I can think about is my friend. Then they totally got it. But I did, and it's only really come back in the last couple of weeks. I just didn't have any motivation. And I'd sit at my desk and it would be like a chore going through stuff. I'd be like, oh, I know I've got to get it done because if I don't, then there'll be no magazine out. And we've committed to producing this many magazines over the year and people have paid us money to do it. But it's only really the last couple of weeks where I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm enjoying this again and I'm into it and it's satisfying and I feel motivated.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
It's good that you've... I think it is it's time, isn't it? You just need to kind of process it all. And but yeah, it is.
Yeah. It's rough.
It is rough because it does just make you question everything.
I mean, it does make you realise how lucky you are and it makes you sort of cherish the stuff that you've got. And but the weird part I found is that every time I've actually felt happy or joy, which again hasn't been much, like I'm usually quite a positive, enthusiastic person and I get happy and excited about stuff, but these last few months I haven't had much of that. And then when I do feel it, I then immediately think of my friend and then feel guilty for feeling happy or joy. It's such a weird thing.
Yeah, it's like I used to think about my friend a lot, and she was always a really happy person. And when I find joy in stuff, I think about how much she'd enjoy it or, you know, I try and, but she was, you've just got to kind of switch your brain around to that way of thinking, but that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Do you know
I guess
I mean?
That'll just take time, won't it?
Yeah, it does.
I think it really will. This is the thing. I'm not too worried. I had counselling for the first time. I've never had any therapy or counselling.
Oh, wow.
But in the thick of it, right at the start, because I was really involved in the day that he died. Like I was out. So my friend took his own life, but I heard in the morning that he'd gone missing and I went up to London and was looking for him.
Yeah.
And then I was with his wife when the police came and told us what happened. So it was like a huge, huge trauma.
Yeah.
I've completely forgotten where I was going with that. What were we just saying?
The
sort of flashed back to frame, what happened.
How you frame things in your mind.
Yeah. That's weird. I was doing a podcast the other day and that happened. I was like, shit, where's this point going?
Menopause. It's menopause.
Oh, God, don't.
It's everything.
But yeah, oh no, that was it. I was talking about the therapy and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, and I was there when we found out the news, and it was such an intense thing to have gone through, and I've never gone through anything like that, and I've lived a charmed life. The only other grief I've ever had has been grandparents when they're elderly and I was young, so couldn't really comprehend it properly, or pets or whatever. And so this was huge, and I'd funnily enough, I've been thinking a lot about how am I going to deal with trauma, like at some point like parents will die, I've been so lucky that at some point something bad is going to happen. And it's going to be fight or flight. What will happen? I like to think I'll be great in a crisis, but actually, will I just shrivel away?
Yeah.
And what kind of happened is that I kind of ran at it and just was there. And it was so intense that I said to my wife, I feel like I'm dealing with it okay, but I'm worried that maybe this trauma might cause issues down the line.
Yeah.
So maybe I should talk to somebody for like in a preventive way to stop something developing. So I spoke to, when I was speaking to Hannah, my wife, she's got a good job, which one of the benefits is that she has access to counselling services that her family can have too. So we set up a few counselling sessions. And it was so reassuring, because everything I said that I was feeling or thinking was just like, this is all normal. You know, it's all normal to be going through all of this. And that really, really helped. And even now, when I'll have a day where I sit down and I've got a picture of my mate just up on the wall here, most of the time I look at that and I don't quite connect with it, because you can't connect with it 24/7. But sometimes I do, and I'm just like, I just feel bereft.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, well, that's fine. That's fine, and that's going to happen, and it will get easier.
Most important thing is to feel it.
Yeah.
Because it's got to come out, so you just have to let it come out and feel it. And that is life. Life is all the good stuff and all the bad stuff, and it's fucking horrible and it's heartbreaking. But unfortunately, it's part of life, isn't it? And I suppose you just have to try and take from it that you're so fortunate that you're not kind of inflicted with certain things, or do you know what I mean?
Like
you can appreciate things that maybe he couldn't, or whatever. And it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking that people, I was talking about this the other day. I can't remember who to. Oh, my friend, I'm going to have him on the podcast. His mum killed herself when he was 22. She was an alcoholic, and she tried to a few times, but she was so sick. And he said that after she died, it was almost a relief for him and his brothers, because she'd obviously been suffering for so long and it wasn't going to get any better. But some of his family were kind of annoyed at him because he wasn't upset enough. But he was like, but it was her life. If she was that unhappy...
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, can you imagine, obviously being in that, I can't imagine being that low to do something like that. So, and it's not anyone's place to tell you that you shouldn't.
No, exactly.
You know, but it's obviously it's the
you can't
people
comprehend
that are left behind. You can't comprehend it at all.
That's reassuring, because if you could comprehend it, then,
well,
you know.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it is just a... Time does heal, but it's just trying to find the little things in your day that you can hold on to. Or I'm a big fan of the sky.
Oh, nice. Okay,
I really like
there's plenty
sky.
Of that going around.
And I find that I'm really glad that I do really like the sky, because I can. It does make me happy. Genuinely makes me happy.
That's
and
amazing.
I think I'm so lucky for that. Because,
always available.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out after this in a minute and have a good old look at the sky, because it is nice and blue.
Where I used to live, to walk to my kids' school, we had to go over the train tracks, basically. So it was up like a bit of a hill. And the view of the sky from there was amazing. And I remember one day I picked them up, and I think there'd been a storm, or there was going to be a storm, but the clouds were amazing. And I was so excited when I picked them up, and I was like, I've got a surprise for you. And when I showed them, they've never been more disappointed. Because they were thinking I was going to pull out sweets when we got home or have something for them. And I was like, look at the sky. And they were like, seriously?
That's not a surprise, is it? You used the wrong word.
No. And I was like, oh. And they still, I mean, this was years ago, and they still wind me up about that. But I was like, it was a really good sky.
Yeah.
whatever.
Well, I found, yeah, the best thing that I've found has been talking about it. And that's why, because I know that I've got some friends who were at school with us as well, and a couple of them have not been able to talk about it or process it or been too busy with work or whatever it may be. And I was so lucky that I was in a position where I could take the time that I needed. And Pip and Stu weren't like, when are you coming back to work? Or when are you going to get this thing done? And that I'm open and I talk about it. So much so that, you know, I bring it up on podcasts with people who weren't expecting to be talking about it.
No, but that's good because but it does help.
It really helps.
It's a massive part of life as well. So the more we talk about things, the easier it is to talk about them, isn't
that's
it?
That's what I think, so, yeah. And people will hear 100%. This and hopefully they'll be like, oh, yeah, okay, no, you know, it's helpful to talk about all this stuff. Because you're right, it is real life and... it could happen to anyone, not necessarily, you know, it's just somebody, people can lose people and it's shocking and awful, but you can cope with it. And if you've got a good support system and you're willing to be open and actually discuss how you're feeling, then that will really help. But I mean, I'm going to come away from this feeling better, having spoken about it again.
Good. Well, thank you for sharing it with me.
Thank you very much. That's all right. It's been great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. Hi. Yes. So that was a lovely Adam. If you want to talk to me about anything that we discuss, then please get in touch. Or if you have any guest or topic suggestions, please get in touch. I hope you are surviving the beginning of the summer holidays okay. Hang in there. Stay safe. Stay sane. Subscribe to the podcast, please, and share it. Big love to you, and I'll see you next week where I have an extremely exciting guest. It's Danny fucking Price. And if you don't know who Danny fucking Price is, then I suggest you search for him on Instagram. He's a legend, and it was an amazing chat, so I'm really looking forward to sharing that with you. But yeah, big up. I'll see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.